right here on 92.9 FM ESPN on X at Jeff_Calkins. Fittingly. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, and you?
I am doing well, except for the fact that we do have a presidential debate tonight. Are you going to watch? Are you going to actually get involved tonight?
I've reflected on it. I think I'm going to take the same approach that I do to the Bills games and just stick my head in the sand. And I'm not going to watch, not because I don't care or not because I, but because I find it to be, it's one of the things, and when I hear politicians getting interviewed too, it always just feels like we're waiting for a gotcha or a stumble or a, and so it's like watching someone walk across a tightrope. Right. And I find that excruciating. And I also don't think, although in this case, I do think it's meaningful. The last debate, we clearly discovered something meaningful, which was Joe Biden was not,
wasn't fit.
Vigorous enough to run again. And with Kamala, we haven't seen much of her. So in that sense, I think it will be useful. I find it also painful. I have to write a column tonight, and so I might just write a column during the debate and catch the highlights. I think that's what I'm going to do. I don't think I'm actually going to watch it in person.
Yeah,
as it unfolds.
For me, it's like how it's the approach I take to, watching the Carolina Panthers. Like, I'm feeling too well to watch it. You know what I mean? I'm just, I don't want to ruin my mood. It's become, have you ever even heard of the movie Idiocracy?
Don't know the movie Idiocracy.
It's about, this guy, he's in a vat, a freezing vat for years and years and years, transported into the future, and he wakes up, and there's like a wrestler as the president, and it's like everything has gone, everybody's dumb. I just feel like we've gotten to a point where the presidential debate, every time Trump steps up there, it's more of a wrestling style jab fest than it is actually a presidential debate. That's the problem I have with it.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'll catch the highlights. I'll catch the highlights.
I mean, there'll be plenty of clips on the old X account.
And there will be plenty of clips. There'll be plenty of analysis. I'll get the gist of what happened. And I may go back and watch it if it's interesting. Like, I didn't listen to Kamala's interview. You know, she finally sat down for a TV interview with whoever it was. And I didn't listen to that in real time, although I was interested to see how she would do. But then later on, Finish Eliza's Run, when I was doing that, I was out there for 8 miles, so at some point I started listening to it then. And so I imagine, I'm certainly interested. It's certainly, a critical debate.
Yep.
A lot of debates are essentially meaningless and don't have much impact. It's unquestionably clear that the last debate had a massive impact, maybe the most important debate, in terms of impact in American history. And I think this one will be, it's so close. It's not just close. It's close in all of the swing states, but it's also close nationally. And so I think it has the potential. I can't imagine not having made up your mind at this point. I just can't quite get my mind around how one wouldn't have made up their mind one way or another.
Yeah.
I honestly can't get my mind around how people wouldn't have made up my mind one way. But whatever, it's fine. But there are people who have not made up their mind, evidently. And so seems like it's going to be a critical debate. I don't know that I'll watch.
All right. Now, I want to have this won't necessarily be a debate, but I was listening to our good friend John Martin on Jason and John talk about the Florida State Memphis game. Did you hear the percentage he gave on what he thinks the percentage chance Memphis goes in to Doak Campbell Stadium and wins? Did you get it?
I didn't hear. No.
He put it at 5%. How do you feel about this game?
That's silly.
I told him today as well, I thought it was silly, because, mathematics, you're going against the mathematics there, too. I think it's 27% chance for them to win regardless.
It's so funny, 5% is just nuts. I don't know what the analytics were saying. I would have said about a 20% chance is what I would have said. Somewhere in there, and that's close to what the what the math is saying. I mean, listen, it's obviously it's a diminished Florida State team. It's not what we thought it was. And Memphis is as good as they've been in a while. It's still going on the road, you know, against a Power Four team, and winning a really, you know, if you lined up the recruits on, you know, one side or the other, right, you know which team has the higher rated recruits, and so I think Florida State will probably win. That's why they're favored, but you know, a lot crazier things happened this past weekend than would have to happen for Memphis to win this game. Like it would not be that stunning for Memphis to win the game, but I don't expect it. You know, why would I?
Okay.
Do you expect it? Do you expect them to win?
Like, I'm not going to say expect to win, but no, I think I honestly I'm at a toss up. I think 50-50. I really think it's that way because this Florida State team, the problem I have, and Connor asked this question earlier, and it dawned on me how wild the situation is for Mike Norvell. He goes, "What's Mike Norvell's offensive plan going to be against Memphis?" And I said, "Of course, you're just going to have to run the ball, but that's not necessarily what he wants to do." Right? What does he want to do? He wants to have a quarterback good enough to actually toss the ball around, get right, some weapons open, create some chunk plays, because they have not been successful running the ball. But that seems like the only thing he can do to keep that offense on pace. And I think that kind of plays into Memphis's strengths on the defensive 100%. Side of the ball. You have really good linebackers that are really good coming downhill. And I think Jordan Hankins has shown he's a very good defensive coordinator at scheming up run fits. So I just think, like, Florida State's offensive game plan's pretty complicated against Memphis, as much as we don't sort of think about it that way.
No, I agree 100%. Like, if you're saying as a Memphis fan, what part of the defense are you still need some, you know, proving here? Are you least confident about the secondary, right? And Florida State may not have a quarterback who can test the secondary. And so, given that, I think you're exactly right. I think it presents some real problems for Florida State. Will Florida State, obviously, outrushed by Georgia Tech considerably, outrushed by Boston College considerably, right, particularly against Boston College. So are we going to see, like, in the end, coming into this season, all we heard was how many veterans are on that offensive line for, yeah, Florida State. Are they going to, have they fixed something? You know, I guess is partly the question. Have they fixed something over the course of these 2 weeks, such they will more resemble the team that we thought they would be? I think that, as much as anything, is part of the question here.
I think also the real reason a lot of people are going to be down on Memphis, and why I think the books are down on Memphis, it's ACC bodies versus AAC bodies. Right, that's the biggest thing you're going to have to pay attention with this offensive line for Florida State. Yeah, they haven't been good against these two ACC opponents, but now you have smaller bodies, and you probably have a little bit less depth, regardless of what you think about Georgia Tech or Boston College.
Yeah, I think that's right, but you know, I mean, you know, is Herring an AAC body, or is he an SEC body? You know, like, right, like Memphis does have some players who, yeah, who can certainly play in any conference. And so, but I think that's it. A, it's on the road. I honestly think Florida State's level desperation plays, yep, into it a little bit too. You know, there's certainly no chance that they're going to be overlooking anything. So you have desperation. You have the fact it's on the road.
Bye week.
The bye week. And then the fact that it's a different level of recruiting and it is or bodies is what you want to say. And so I think those are all the reasons why it's, you know, why it's a 6-point spread right now. So yeah, intriguing. But here's my question for you: does Memphis? Once upon a time, we thought if Memphis went there and played well, that would be good enough. That's not what they're going to do, right? But if they went, played well, kept it close,
right,
that would be good enough to do what they need to do. Because, listen, who could expect them to go to Florida State and win on the road? So as long as they won, great. But if they lost a close game, everything they wanted to do was certainly still
ahead
in front of them.
Right.
Yeah. Has it changed? Has the dynamic changed because of A, what Florida State is, and B, what is looking like is happening around not just the conference, where South Florida is looking daunting and Tulane is looking reasonably daunting, but around the country where you've got Northern Illinois, what they're doing, where you've got Boise State nearly beating Oregon, where you've got UNLV looking good, Liberty, whatever, we'll see, they play cupcakes.
Right.
But I'm not sure, once upon a time, a close loss would have gotten done what needed to get done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, for a win. I'm not sure if close, I think the stakes are that much higher. I really think in order to feel like you had a successful trip to Tallahassee now, you have to win.
Yeah.
As unfair as that may be.
I think the dynamics have changed in the fact that you're not going to get credit for playing close. You're really not going to get that much credit for outright winning the game. Now, outright winning the game, you still have a chance to go undefeated and really put yourself in an impeccable spot when it comes to being the college football playoff, you know, representative out of the group of five. The way I have termed it, it's just, for me, the dynamic of this game, instead of free shot against top 10 opponents, become can you afford to buy yourself some wiggle room? If you beat Florida State, you have wiggle room the rest of the year, at least a tad bit. If you don't beat them, you can't afford to lose another game if you want to accomplish everything you want to accomplish as far as getting
and
to the college football playoff.
It may not be enough even if you don't.
Okay. I mean, I could
see. Okay, back to percentages.
We'll see. Like, obviously, it's a long season. I don't want to overreact after week two to Boise State and everything else.
No, but here's the problem. There's no question. Like, John was asking me, you know, is it over because Northern Illinois is going to run the table? Well, sure, if they do. But I think
the overcorrection of putting them in the AP Top 25, I already talked about that this week. I think that's a little much.
Teams are going to lose games. But,
right.
But if you lose to Florida State and you run the table the rest of the way, I think you're still in good position, but you would then need Northern Illinois to lose a game, and you absolutely need Boise to lose a game. And you actually probably need even Liberty, given the cupcake schedule, them to lose a game. And very clearly some of them will. Will they all? I think there's some chance that you'll be screwed.
Okay. I think 12-1. I think 12-1 with an undefeated record in the AAC and an AAC championship would certainly get you into the college football playoff. Now, obviously, there's no guarantee with that because Boise State could completely win out, but I'm not betting on all of these teams at the same time to go win out. I know what Boise State looked like, but
if Boise State wins out, and we're stipulating that if Memphis wins out, and let's be honest, Boise State is as likely to win out as Memphis is, right?
Okay.
And if Boise State wins out, I think at this point they clearly have a better loss. If Memphis were to lose to Florida State, Boise State would have a better loss than Memphis would, right? Very clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think, and plus they, by the way, they have a high, they right now, they both have a signature player because you got Sass, but right now one
Genty
of them is playing like a signature player.
Genty's playing like
a signature player. And so I think Boise State then would, if you're saying Memphis close loss to Florida State, and Boise State close loss to Oregon, I think you give it to Boise State. Likely.
Yeah, if they're both 12-1, sure. Yeah, but I'm not betting on that happening. I'm sorry. I know Boise State has looked good. That's
the
problem.
But I'm also not betting on it happening for Memphis.
Sure,
they got to play South Florida and Tulane on the road.
Sure, that's fair.
No,
that's fair.
So anyway, here's the other thing it really can do is that it is an opportunity. I heard a lot of people unhappy about the turnout Saturday, right, or disappointed in the turnout Saturday. And I do think this is one way, a win.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is one way to change the narrative there. It's another way to get another 4,000 people in the stands, right? If you lose it, it's like, okay, nice team, they can beat Troy, right? If you win it, it's like people who've been on the couch, I think, sit up and take notice a little bit, and it starts to feel magical. In this team's most magical seasons, they have always had that kind of a win, right?
Mm-hmm.
You beat Ole Miss. You beat UCLA.
Yep.
There's always a win like that. And I think this is an opportunity to sort of, to give a little bit of rocket boost to the interest in the team, which is at this point, I think, needed.
Yeah, and another thing about this game that I should have run this by a little bit earlier. But I have been sort of told by some people, well, Silverfield's always lost this type of game. He's always seemed to struggle in this type of game. Well, I think it's a little different. Like, when he's an underdog, he tends to struggle. Like, Tulane last year at SMU, but he also had UCF year one, beat Mississippi State.
How about Iowa
State in the bowl game? Yeah, but either way, I have heard those concerns about being an underdog in a game like this. And, like, the only thing I can say is I just think the circumstances have changed pretty dramatically the last 2 years for this program and for Ryan Silverfield when it comes to playing in these types of games, in these types of sort of environments.
Yeah, I don't know how many games. I don't think that's a fair knock at all. I mean, there's I don't know how many of these types. I don't know what we're going to put in this in this category of these types
of
games.
Being an underdog. Being an underdog.
But
because largely last year it was win the games you were favored in, lose the games you were a dog in.
I mean, that is largely true. That was true last year. But as you point out, beat Mississippi State, beat UCF, you know, and I don't know. Like, yeah, sure, they were underdogs and they lost to Missouri, but they look good doing it. Like, I'm not going to hold that against them. That's a game at, you know, really at Missouri, is in St. Louis. I don't think, if the implication is this team comes up badly or wanting in those games, I don't think that's necessarily a trend.
I agree with you. It's a little bit of a narrative that I've seen sort of percolating, and I just find it a little bit strange. I don't know how much based in fact it is.
In conference that's sort of, I mean, we were disappointed last year that they very clearly, until they got the bowl game, they beat the Cupcakes. That's what they did. Yeah. You know, they until they got to the bowl game, they beat the Cupcakes. At which point, and that's why that game mattered so much. It mattered to get to double digits and wins, but it also mattered to win a game that, like, made people notice a little bit. Like, you weren't just punching down. And so, so I think that was fair last year, but I don't think that's fair over the course of his tenure there.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. Monday Night Football last night. I understand the 49ers just knocked the Jets' D-line around, just ran them over. And Jordan Mason was phenomenal. Hate the fact that he had to deal with all the nonsense after the game with the injury report when he had I saw it on the broadcast, his highest rushing total in a game since high school. Can't we just let that guy enjoy it and not get caught up in the drama of NFL and NFLPA and injury reports, all that crap?
Well, I want to be clear on that. I agree. It was unfortunate that he was felt so beset and sad.
But they need to be honest about their injury report.
I don't blame the media at all. Like, among other things, you can partly ask that question, not just as a gotcha question, but, like, it's also just nice narrative. Here's a guy, he could have said, I found out an hour before the game, and it was, you know, and it's part of a... I don't blame the media at all for asking the question. I think they would have been negligent had they not asked the question. I'm with you. I heard you earlier. If you're going to lie, this is for all of us, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
If you're going to tell an outright lie, make sure the other people
cover the lie.
Need to cover for you are covering for you, right? You know what I mean? Like, if you set out, what is it? First we set out to deceive, whatever it is. Well, lies, I don't know what the hell the saying is. But anyway, if you're going to lie like the 49ers did, you've got to make sure that everyone else is covering for you. And if you are caught in the lie because that person didn't cover for you, it's not on that person. It's on you.
Yes.
You're the one who told the lie in the first place, and you're the lie. You're the person who didn't get tie up all the loose ends about all the people you need to be in on the lie. And so I don't blame the media at all for asking that question. I blame the 49ers for A, lying, and then B, if they're going to lie, hanging him out to dry. Now, I do think it's incredible. He is the 10th running back under Shanahan in San Francisco to run for 100 yards.
That's pretty good.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't even good at Georgia Tech. I mean, he was fine. He ran for 600 yards or something. It was like, last night is, my God, you know, he looked like Icky Woods or something at his heyday. Like, he was just running people over. It was unbelievable. So I thought it was, to me, my biggest takeaway from the game was my God, the 49ers can do that without their best player, without one of the five best players in the league like that?
My question was, how much was he going to run for if he actually suited up? Good Lord.
That's true, too. And yeah, and with Brandon Ayuk dropping touchdown passes, this was not even the 49ers close to their zenith, and they just crushed them. However, as someone who roots hard against Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, mostly because they're in the Bills division.
That's where I was going to ask.
But then the other stuff is true also. I would have liked him to look worse than he did. I didn't think he looked particularly bad. He didn't have a lot of chances. And what's more striking is after Garrett Wilson, they just don't have a lot of weapons. But I think if you're someone who wanted to be able to cross off Aaron Rodgers after, I don't think you can. They got the Titans this next week, and I thought certainly in the first drive, and then in the touchdown pass on the free play, he looked that was Rodgers-esque. He did not look like an old man who couldn't play football, which I was hoping. And so he certainly looked better. Certainly a huge upgrade from the Jets from last year's fiasco. So I got the L that I wanted him to have, but I could have used Aaron Rodgers looking more inept than he did.
He looked pretty good. A little less zip, but he still was placing the ball really well. I did see his, passing chart. There's the next-gen stats. Every throw was to the left side of the field, though, which I found a little bit strange, but I can't imagine something like that is going to stick all year. But he did look pretty good, and I agree with Robert Saleh when he says, without question, it feels a lot better to be 0-1 with Aaron Rodgers this year than 1-0 last year without him. There's no question about it. Now, Connor, can we queue up some applause? Can we queue up some applause for Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills in Week 1? I thought that was a valiant effort. Good win. How about it? Well done to your Bills over the Cardinals. I know it's the Cardinals, but they're pretty feisty. Defense didn't look great, but Josh Allen, I picked him to win MVP. That was a good start.
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit of a step back for the Bills. Now they lost Aaron Johnson, their all-pro nickel guy, having already lost their best linebacker. At least they lost him. So they could get lit up by the Dolphins this week. But, that was running for two touchdowns, throwing for two touchdowns when he's got basically, Khalil Shakir, is a decent player. He's got a bunch of decent players around him. And he is just a different dude. In fact, we saw that. We saw Mahomes. He wasn't superstar Mahomes this week, but he was really good. Josh was really good. C.J. Stroud was really good. In this mess of bad quarterbacking, and we had a lot of bad quarterbacking, just from the rookies.
Kind of wild.
A lot of bad quarterbacking. You see why, the elite quarterbacks are still the elite quarterbacks, and that was he had the one fumble, but otherwise he was terrific. Four touchdowns, and that's what he does. It's kind of amazing too. I give the Bills credit for drafting, moving up. They had to move up and then move up again to draft him, and then developing him and everything else. But if the Bills had been picking second, would they have picked Sam Darnold? I think so.
Probably.
And so some of it's luck. Some of it's luck. The guy is just a different dude, And it would be nice, certainly for me as a Bills fan. He feels like someone who should get a Super Bowl. I don't know that he ever will, but, he is a Super Bowl-level quarterback.
At the very least, get him an MVP at some point. I think this year is as good a chance as any.
If it's okay.
I know you'd prefer the Super Bowl, but,
MVP, MVP nice. I'll take the Super Bowl.
I got you. But we'll keep up with them. I'm still concerned about them, but the AFC East, who knows? It could go a lot of different ways, although the Patriots have won one.
How about them Pats? How about them Pats?
And the Bengals. I don't know. I'm terrified about them. I'll probably talk about it after I get you off of here. Bengals terrify me.
The quintessential slow start, and Joe Burrow.
He's wiggling his wrist too much, though. It's the quintessential slow start.
Every throw was within 5 yards of the line. He was not pushing the ball down the field. He did, and it's why when people rank him and they pick Josh over Joe Burrow, it's not. That's purely just because you have to factor the injury thing in there, and I think we saw it. We saw it in game one.
Well, listen to the next segment because I factor something else in it when I rank Josh over Joe Burrow. But appreciate it.
See ya.
That's Jeff Calkins. That's Jeff _Calkins on X. David Minfian, columnist, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. And now we need to go ahead and take a trip around the National Football League. So let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll get to that right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's time to take our daily trip around the National Football League right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Connor, go ahead and hit it.
The Miami Dolphins.
All right, so Tyreek Hill's body cam video was released. What happened here, Tyreek Hill got pulled over by a couple of motorcycle cops or motorcycle policemen. He was going roughly 60 miles per hour in a 40-mile-per-hour zone. Now, on the ticket, it said that they estimated he was going at 60 miles per hour. They didn't get an actual reading with a radar gun. But what happened? They pulled up, told him to put his window down. He put his window down to give them the license, but he was very confrontational. Very, very confrontational. Now he puts his window back up. They wanted him to put it back down. And basically, they knocked on it. He said, stop knocking on my window. They pulled him out of the car immediately, forcefully. It was way too much. Police officers use excessive force for seemingly not that big of a reason. It's not illegal to be disrespectful, although I wouldn't support it. And it's also not illegal to have your window up. Although, mostly in a traffic stop, I would not, that would, it's not the move I would make. But he spent 25 minutes in handcuffs. And really, the big offense that led to all this was he had an attitude and he had his window up. And that's, to me, I'm sorry, we have to have a real conversation here. Does that mean enough to put a knee on the back of a guy, throw him to the ground, and put him in handcuffs? Is that enough? Does that rise to the occasion to do it? Now, people will just chalk this up to say, just be respectful and comply. And yes, I think you should always be respectful and, for the most part, comply with police officers. But at the same time, I don't think it should lead when they just ask you to put your window down or if your window's up. It shouldn't lead to this type of, I don't know, just embarrassment, this type of physical force. It's just a lot. Now, I think two things can be true at the same time. Tyreek Hill was being very confrontational. He's being rude. And I think if we're talking about trying to be safe in a situation like that, because I think we should have these conversations, the best thing you can do is be respectful and do what a police officer tells you. And Tyreek Hill was not in the mood to do that, and that's why all of this happened. I think two things can be true at the same time. I will never excuse what those police officers did to him, but I do believe in this. I think Tyreek Hill could have helped himself in that moment. Connor, I want to hear your thoughts, at least to a certain extent.
I tend to agree. My biggest takeaway is part of being a police officer is de-escalation. And when you have the authority and the power and you have a gun on your hip, you should be way better at de-escalation than those police officers were.
You know what, really?
They asked him to roll his window down. Yeah, he was being rude. No way around that. They went from, we might pull you out of the car to we're pulling you out of the car within like a second.
And saying we're not playing this game. And
they were on a power trip.
And then what really made me feel, you know, once I saw how they treated Jonnu Smith, his teammate, and when I saw them put Calais Campbell, who was the Walter Payton Man of the Year, in handcuffs for trying to de-escalate the situation, it showed me they were in a mindset where they were ready to escalate. They were ready to prove a point. And I don't like that attitude with police officers because that leads to unnecessary violence. Mm-hmm. It leads to unnecessary death. And that is a scary proposition in the society that we have. And I thought those guys were very much overreacting to the situation.
Agreed.
He was angry. Just let him be angry. Take his license. Give him the ticket. And we could have avoided all of this stuff.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
So the Pittsburgh Steelers are planning to start quarterback Justin Fields on Sunday once again. How about that? Russell Wilson, though. Are you asking if he's got the calf injury? Are you asking that? Because that's why he didn't play week one. That's what they told us. He's back healthy. But I don't know what this is about. I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that Justin Fields, after winning the first game for the Steelers 18-10 over the Falcons, is going to start the rest of the year. But I don't know. It looks like he's getting the first crack at it out after all. Or maybe, and I want some thoughts on this. Is it because they're going to play the Broncos this week and there's sort of the revenge factor from Russell Wilson and the Broncos and it could be a distraction? I don't know. But Justin Fields is getting the first crack at it, even though Russell Wilson is supposedly back healthy.
The Cleveland Browns.
All right, the Cleveland Browns. Did you see their latest signing, Connor, by chance?
Was it Tom Brady?
It was not. Although that not a bad idea. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Deshaun Watson has another sexual assault lawsuit on his hands. So maybe they need to find... I mean, they got Jameis Winston on the roster. They could figure that out. Kadarius Toney. That's their response.
Oh, that's going to help. That's going to fix things.
That's their response. Go get a wide receiver who can't catch the football. That's perfect.
Do they need DB help?
They need a quarterback. They can fit Kevin Stefanski's system. That's what they need. But Kadarius Toney, after his time with the Chiefs, has gotten signed by the Browns. I thought Kadarius Toney would be solid coming out of Florida, but his hands just aren't good enough. He's got some speed. He can run some routes. But he has become sort of just a gadget guy. And I don't know what the Browns are actually going to do with him. I would imagine he'll start on the practice squad and they'll lift him up and down as they go along in the season. He's certainly going to have to learn the playbook first. But that signing just does nothing for me. And the Browns and the situation they're in right now, they need a lot more help outside of that. And I wonder what direction they're going to go with this Deshaun Watson case, but we'll talk about that a little bit later in the blitz.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
All right. So let's talk about Joe Burrow. Let's have this conversation. Joe Burrow, there's a lot of videos coming out about his wrist. And if you watched the game against the Patriots, he could not uncork the ball deep, did not have a good stat line. He just looked generally uncomfortable. Now, you could chalk it up to T. Higgins being out. I'll get to that in a second. But he was moving his wrist around. I'm very concerned about what he's going to look like going into the future. I know he is 1-8 in those season opening games, early games in the season. So he's always been really bad to start the year, and the Bengals have too. But it shouldn't have looked that bad against what is probably a bottom two, bottom three roster in the National Football League with the Patriots. I know that what we've done with him is sort of put him in this conversation with Patrick Mahomes, with Josh Allen, with Lamar Jackson. Like these guys that are just MVP caliber players, unbelievable. You feel like they can win a Super Bowl any given time. You feel like they can get over top. They're the elite crop of quarterbacks in the National Football League. And for different reasons too, like Josh Allen has the legs and the arm. Lamar Jackson's legs are unbelievable. Patrick Mahomes, processing speed, what he's been able to do in the past, unbelievable. He's been grouped in there, and I think largely it's because he's 5-1 against Patrick Mahomes in his career. But I do want to give you another stat. He's 0-5 against Baker Mayfield and Jacoby Brissett in his career. So this is a guy who I think we have put in this conversation a little too quick, and I get it. I understand that there was the AFC Championship back-to-back years. He got to a Super Bowl. But let me sort of bring you behind the scenes here. In that Super Bowl year, you know what his TD to INT ratio was? 5 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Do you know what his defense did that year from a points per game standpoint in those playoffs? They had the second best scoring defense in the playoffs that year. So he sort of rode his defense in there. And when we look at the cream of the crop quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, one thing I think they all have in common that I think Joe Burrow is truly missing out on, and maybe we just haven't been able to see it, I think they lift up the pieces around him. Let's talk about it last year. Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl. Name a wide receiver that was worth his salt. Rashee Rice? That was it. Yes, Travis Kelce, sure. Great. That's awesome. But then you had Kadarius Toney, who did nothing. Sky Moore, who did nothing. And then you tried to go to Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Done nothing. And he's not even on the field right now with the Buffalo Bills. He didn't do anything in training camp. Look at Josh Allen. He's made guys like Khalil Shakir, decent wide receivers. Look at Lamar Jackson. He is not, he hasn't had wide receivers. It's been Mark Andrews. Now he's got Isaiah Likely. Sure, that's one of the best weapons he's had. But he's OBJ when he was 40 years old. They have lifted up consistently their teams to these great seasons without the best weapons on the outside. And I saw Josh Allen just do it in week 1 with basically nobody out there. Stephon Diggs is gone. Joe Burrow has always had T. Higgins. He's always had Ja'Marr Chase. He had Tyler Boyd for a while, who I think is a certified wide receiver, too. Quite frankly, people would say, well, he lifted up Tyler Boyd. No, Tyler Boyd with Andy Dalton was a 1,000-yard receiver before Joe Burrow got there. So I just think he's missing that aspect of his game. He is not able to lift up the rest of his team like the cream of the crop quarterbacks. In fact, sometimes, and I believe this with that Super Bowl year, I thought the defense helped the rest of that team. Now, that defense stinks now, but I just wanted to throw that out there. It's been a very interesting ride with Joe Burrow. And I think we gave him a whole lot of credit, as we should, for back-to-back AFC championships, but I'm not sure he's exactly what we thought, putting him in that conversation with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. I don't think he's on that level.
I want him to do well, but I was very concerned about the wrist heading into the season. And then if you watched the game on Sunday, you could just tell that he wasn't right. So I am rooting for Joe Burrow, but I still have a lot of questions about it.
Yeah, and he's got to stay on the field. That's the other part.
Yeah.
The other guys are way more reliable than him. They're way more reliable. And just, I know it's health is it's tough to talk about, but you have to stay on the field to be in that same conversation.
The quotes about it becoming inflamed and swelling are...
Through the game.
Concerning.
Did you see him try to pick up that water bottle?
Yeah, I did. It took two hands.
Now, I'm ready for more NFL, and FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, is continuing its special offer to keep us watching more. Now through September 22nd, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get a three-week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then with the YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season Sunday afternoon out-of-market game. All you need is a Google account and a current form of payment, and you can cancel anytime. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to download America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally after free trial. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. And if you have a gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. We'll come back, wrap up hour number two with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
9. We talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, we do have the presidential debate tonight. I'm telling you, I'm not going to watch it. I'll just catch the clips. Because, I don't know, again, I'm feeling a little bit too well to just watch that debate. I don't feel good about it. Now, did you see where we're going to have a first time happening tonight, Connor, about a presidential debate and where it's actually going to be hosted? Disney Plus and Hulu are going to have the debate live streaming on both their platforms. How about that? First time ever, presidential debate right there. Although you can watch it on ABC.
Baby's first
debate.
That's
where it's supposed to be. Huh?
Baby's first debate.
Yeah. How about them? But they were supposed to do a joint venture, right? It was supposed to be Hulu and Disney Plus. It's supposed to be like a big, bundle streaming package that they were going to call something else. I believe that's been canceled here.
I have the bundle.
There's a bundle, but they were going to make it, put it under one roof, and charge more. But I think they have gotten legal system has worked that out and said they can't do it.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's that. Now, also, I did want to get to this. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark, this was earlier this week, over the weekend, really. He said he's going to pause discussions about adding UConn. And he said, as commissioner, it's my responsibility to explore a variety of value-creating opportunities on behalf of the Big 12. Following detailed discussions with my conference colleagues alongside UConn leadership, we have jointly decided to pause our conversations at this time. We will instead focus our attention and resources on ushering in this new era of college athletics. That was the end of his statement. I always thought it was going to be a little bit of a... uphill battle to get the rest of the Big 12 to agree to bring in a basketball school for 2026 and then a football school for 2031. A little bit too many moving parts. I don't know if they necessarily like the footprint of UConn up there in the Northeast. But in the end of the day, if they end up picking these discussions back up, I have understood why they have their interest in UConn. I know that college football consistently moves the needle in these conversations about realignment. But if there was ever going to be a program that moved the needle on the college basketball side to strengthen your stronghold on college basketball, the two-time defending national champions are probably that program that you could bring in and convince your membership to latch onto. If they ever pick these conversations back up, I understand it.
They were at the two poles that you can possibly be in college football and college basketball.
Right.
They were at the
top
of the mountain in college basketball and at the very bottom of said mountain with college football.
Yeah,
truly one of the worst programs ever.
It's kind of strange, right? Because you do have to decide if you're going to bring them in, do they have any upward trajectory? They've been better under Jim Mora Jr. since he came in. When they were in the Big East, it's not like they were a complete waste of space in the Big East as a football program. They were in an Orange Bowl one year. Randy Edsall saw some success, had a couple of 10-win seasons, 9-win seasons. They have some level of success in the 21st century on the football side of things. But you have to ask yourself the question, if they get the resources and the payouts from the Big 12, can they actually get back to that point? Will they actually try to get back to that point, or will they continue with sort of how it's been and just invest in the basketball side?
Do you have any faith that they could become a okay program?
Not really. Not really.
Well, there's the issue.
Like, I think if you, like, them peaking in the Big 12 on the football side would be like 7-5. That would be unreal for them. If they were able, but they're going to have to invest. They're going to have to care. I don't know that if that geographic footprint, I don't know if, like, they are very much in that college basketball mindset. I don't know if they much care about football right there.
I don't think they do, because even in the comments that they have made, it's not just basketball that they've been pushing. They've been talking about how just all of their sports have had a lot of success, and they've been pushing all of the sports. And then it seems like they're like, oh yeah, in the football program.
And they have an old stadium, and they haven't really tried to update their recruiting model. They haven't updated their facilities in years on the football side, but the Lord knows they've taken care of the basketball side on multiple occasions, men's and women's. So the Big 12, if they ultimately pick this conversation back up with UConn, they're going to have to have a sit-down with UConn and say, okay, when you get this money and you join our conference as a football school in 2031, are you actually willing to try to make it a winner? That's and obviously they could lie to your face and say, sure, yeah, and then do completely,
which they will do.
Completely, you know, defy that.
Right.
But you have to decide how honest and truthful they're being about making that damn football program a winner, because the only one to ever really do it is Randy Edsall.
It feels like UConn is still more of an option than Gonzaga, because I know that they had a cup of coffee with Gonzaga, but I think UConn makes more sense.
A basketball only is weird to me.
Only.
Why? Why would you do that? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, yeah, you want a stronghold on the you know, be the best basketball conference, just to strengthen that case, being the best basketball conference in America. But I don't know. I feel like you still want to try to make something happen on the football side. And then I will say, if they ultimately ever add UConn, they're going to be at that odd number, what, 17? So maybe there's more.
Package deal with Memphis?
There? I don't know about that. I would hope. That would be a great thing to hope for. But hopes don't necessarily come true all the time. Your hopes and your wishes. You hope that they end up happening, but with Memphis, we've seen when it comes to realignment, it's always been sort of a pipe dream for the most part. Hope it works out at some point, though. But let's go ahead and get to hour number three. We're hopping into the Blitz around 6:30. But coming up next, have to get to Christian Fowler. We'll talk Memphis versus FSU. We'll talk about all the basketball nonsense. First time I've been able to catch up with him since all of that hit the fan. But we'll go ahead and grab a conversation with Christian Fowler next, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.